Tired of commuting across town for music lessons? Are you sick of crappy YouTube tutorials? Then go to fetchclass.com. www.fetchclass.com. Teach and be taught in a secure video conference, one-on-one. Better than Skype and or FaceTime. Included is a scheduling system that reminds you of upcoming lessons. It's great for teachers and students alike. Join now and get learning. www.fetchclass.com. That's www.fetchclass.com. Are you an artist or a musician? Do you have things for sale but no means to sell it? You need bot.96.lt. It's a digital hub for your stuff. There's no need to build a website, it's built for you. Be part of an e-commerce community. Sell anything you want. If you already have a web store, you can join for free now. Go to bot.96.lt for more details. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the Apolog podcast. Thanks so much for supporting the show, and thanks a lot for telling a friend. You can go to www.apolog.esy.es. Apolog is spelt APOLOGUE.ESY.ES. Please subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, please subscribe to that too, and rate and review 5 stars, please, 5 stars. Also, if you shop on Amazon, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of apolog.esy.es and bookmark it. And every time you shop on Amazon, go to that bookmark and you'll be supporting the show. It costs you no extra money, but it really helps me out. Thank you so much and enjoy this show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Apolog Podcast, episode number 13. And I'm joined today by Colin Drew Lichty. Lichty, is it?
Swiss-German Mennonite.
Swiss-German Mennonite. Wow.
Yeah.
Don't pigeonhole yourself, man.
Yeah, man. It's my dad. My dad grew up in New Hamburg, Ontario, in an area called Punky Doodles Corners.
What?
I'm not making that up. You can find it on Wikipedia.
New Berlin, isn't that Kitchener-Waterloo now?
What's that?
Isn't New Berlin Kitchener-Waterloo area?
Yeah. New Hamburg.
Okay, New Hamburg. Yeah. So there's New Berlin, New Hamburg. And New Hamburg still exists, right? That
I'm
town.
Pretty sure, yeah.
On the way to Stratford, I think you drive through New Hamburg.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's nothing like Hamburg.
Yeah.
At all.
No.
Nope. Very small.
Yes, yeah, very, very, very small. It has an area called Punky Doodles Corners.
Punky Doodles Corners. That sounds very...
It's made up, but it's real.
Let's talk about you, Colin.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you. Let's talk about when we first met. I know when we first met is we first met in the Maryland's Vitamins days.
Yes. And you recorded. Did we do Politics on the Dance Floor with you first?
It was the 7-inch.
7-inch. So. So we did Squeegee Girl 7-inch.
That's right.
First. 4 songs. Let me see if I can remember them. Squeegee Girl, clearly. 35 Burnout.
Yep.
The Rapist in Me.
And that sounds super out of context.
Yeah.
At all. Super bad.
Yeah. And then
I had one called The Boy Toucher in Me. But we didn't make the cut.
Didn't make the cut. Oh, now I'm blanking on the 4th song. And yeah, but there was a 4th song as well.
Yeah.
And we had a good time recording with you. And Maryland's Vitamins was my first punk band ever. We started when I was like, I guess... 19. I was still in high school in 19.
Yes.
Because back then they had grade 13, and I stretched grade 13 into grade 14.
13 and a half.
Yeah. So I could audit the art class and just show up whenever I wanted and get free materials.
Right.
And yeah. And then.
Did you go to university after that?
I went to OCAD for a year and dropped out because I built up this portfolio of paintings.
Yeah.
And then, first year, they start you back at Color Wheels. Not like I'm not even making that up. You're like $3,000 a year, and I'm doing a fucking color wheel.
Yeah.
So I dropped out of that, and then played in the vitamins, and then went to school when I was 25 at U of T, and joined another band called Hostage Life, and managed to tour, go to school, and somehow pass and get out of university.
Yeah, I remember the days of Maryland's Vitamins, because we did a few things in a few different studios. One of them actually was literally, I think, half a kilometer from here.
Yeah.
Down at Ossington and Dundas. That studio burnt down.
Oh, yeah.
After I left. There was a fire upstairs in the old Portuguese men's club.
Yeah.
There was a fire. I remember looking out the front window. I heard a whole bunch of shit going on upstairs. It was like, boom, 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 and I'm like, holy shit, there's a fight or something going on. And I managed to look out that front door, and there was a dude running with no shirt. Like running, and all these old men. Rah, 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 rah. And it was like, it was looking like that guy was going to get fucking killed.
Yeah.
I remember going in there. Oh, remember the little place next door, the Nova Era? It's still there.
I remember we went through the Nova Era, or we went through like a convenience store to get in.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. There was a like a little Portuguese grocery store. And there was, but they stopped doing it. They used to have their water right by the door to get to my, like, literally go out and into the hallway and into the lobby of my place. And they used to keep the water there until people were just ripping off water. So they finally got smart to it and moved it up to the front up by the till.
Yeah.
And remember the, We had, I had so many good days at that place. I recorded so many bands, maybe too many.
Yeah.
Maybe too many.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, me, I could only spend so much time in a studio.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was the singer. So the first, you know, week or 2 weeks or whatever is, you don't do shit. You do ghost tracks, but even those, you're just, you know.
Not in those days, though.
Oh, yeah.
Not in those days. We were doing like 4 songs a day and singing them at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah.
I remember those days, man. We hardly spent any real time on that stuff, which I think, I don't know. I'm trying to get back to that now.
Yeah.
Trying to get back into just getting it done. Don't get too crazy with cheats and lies.
Yeah.
You know, there's a time and place for all that shit. And it's not with punk rock.
Yeah. I like the cheats and lies. I love it. Because, you know, I don't know how to sing properly.
Yes.
And so
Come on. Don't you giving yourself.
Well, no. I mean, technically. So, like, I'm pretty sure I got nodes.
Right.
Like, I sing for 30 minutes and then I've lost my voice. I'm raspy.
Yeah.
You know,
and that you can get that back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so I love the cheats and lies, cause I just do my thing for 20 minutes and I can whip off 3 songs and just do, you know, multiple, you know, that multiple track recording where okay, engineer, piece my best stuff together.
Yeah. I just worked with a band called Rules, which is Ben Rispin and all those guys, and two guys, or the drummer from Penske Files. And talk about dudes who know how to fucking play. Holy shit.
Those guys are great.
Wow. And what we did is we did they just played 4 songs 4 times.
Perfect.
So no singing yet. We started singing, and then everybody got a little bit too drunk at the end of the night. So it turned into, they were there for 7 hours, and we recorded literally 12 songs.
Yeah.
But we had stuff in between where there was just noise and all this stuff. And it sounds like a live show.
Oh, that's great.
Now what we got to do is pick the cheats and lies. We have to pick the best takes.
Yeah.
It might even get more clinical.
I mean, but that is so much, you know, that is like how recording was in the 50s and 60s. Yeah. You know, you
one
like,
take.
Well, yeah, but you do, like, I mean, there's so many takes of like Elvis, If I Can Dream.
Oh, dude, yeah.
You know?
Day in the Life, I think, has them like 48 or 50 takes.
Yeah.
That they managed to use like 12 of those different takes to make Day in the Life.
Yeah.
So it all happened sort of back then too. But there's times like, I mean, it's true. Like when you see that part of La Bamba where they're just doing La Bamba over and over and over again. Like that, we used to do that, man.
Yeah.
And we used to like, because we never recorded with a click.
Yeah.
We just went for it. We did it as best as we could. And you know what? I was learning on the fly.
Like, yeah.
I really had no clue what the hell I was doing.
Maryland's Vitamins was, we were the kings of, we had no idea what we were doing. No clue.
A lot of people picked up on your awesome punk rock stuff, and just like your vibe was just incredible.
Oh, thanks, man.
The live shows, your singing abilities, and probably still today, but when you used to see Colin do full like vocal takes, he'd put his whole body, you put your whole body into it.
And
it's like, I've never seen anybody to this day really sing that way.
Yeah.
Where you're like literally almost looking like you're like vomiting.
Well, I used to vomit on stage all the time for being out of shape and too drunk.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's a different reason. Yeah, we're gonna get to that. No, but the whole part of just, and I can't explain it, but it's a whole body thing. And I actually, as going on in life, I learned a lot about how you sang, and I remembered parts of that and what came out of it.
Yeah.
Because if you listen to Marilyn's Vitamins stuff, you can hear yourself like physically moving.
Yeah.
It's like, and I started doing that, and then it didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't, you know, when I started doing my band stuff, and so I realized I have to stay still.
Yeah.
While I'm singing, I can't. Hey, let's talk about you and as a kid. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Like, I was born in 1975, July 7th. So I was like 2 years off from like the luckiest day, like, you know, 7/7/77, just 2 years off, you know, fuck.
Whatever happened.
All could have been different.
Yeah.
So yeah, I grew up in Orangeville, Ontario, which at the time had a population of about 14,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Orangeville used to be called New Dachau.
Yeah. Well, it's named after William of Orange,
who
was the Orangeman who died. Whatever, they hated everybody.
Yeah.
So there's a long history of xenophobia and racism in Orangeville.
Even to this day.
Yeah.
Well, just go to Tim Hortons.
Yeah. it's a lot different now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't know. You can make an argument for...
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything. Nobody listens to this podcast from Orange Million, so fuck you all.
I was going to tell my whole family.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm going to cut that out.
Yeah.
That's only coming from me. Colin loves Orangeville. Remember Five Knuckle Chuckle?
I do. I actually, the past year, reconnected with Corey.
Okay.
And he actually just put out, and he works in the underground comic scene, which I'm really, really into, and just put out an anthology of Canadian alt comics and by cartoonists from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
The name is escaping me, but yeah, so he's doing stuff, like he's always doing musical projects. He was actually working for a while with my sister-in-law.
Okay.
And so yes, I definitely remember Five Knuckle.
Yeah, they used to rehearse in an old storage, like an outdoor storage place.
Yeah.
And I recorded their first album, and I remember having to go get paid, and I'm like, where are you? We're like, we're at this self-storage place, unit, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, you practice in a storage space? That's awesome. And then I get there, and there's like tons of bands.
Yeah.
And it's like an outdoor in the summer thing. I'm like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. Like, there's no way.
You do it in the winter.
In the winter. But at the same time, it was like a party house for kids, but outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so people just up their fucking, their garage door and play.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So, yeah, so you went through, what was your public school? And
yeah,
were you into music back then and all that?
Well, in elementary school, I went to Springbrook Elementary School, which was like an open concept school, 70s idea, you know.
Like a bunch of hippies to me.
Library with like no doors on any of the classrooms.
Wow.
Terrible idea, because if, you know, the grade 6 class was having music class and the grade 3 class was having a test, you could hear the grade 6 class. I think they eventually
put doors on.
And, you know, I had a fair amount of trouble as a kid. I got into a fair amount of shit, you know. My parents divorced when I was 14 and didn't have a very good relationship prior to that. So I was, you know, whatever, acting out, getting in shit. And then in high school, grade 9, discovered beer. And actually had
as we all did.
Yeah, had that moment. I literally said, why, like, this, where's this been? Why haven't we been doing this all the time? And then from there, I went fucking crazy and drinking. My weekend in high school started on Wednesday. And then if I made it to class on Thursday, Friday, I'd be wasted. And then, you know, one thing led to another. And my dad sent me to community drug and alcohol counseling. So I started drinking at 14, and by 16, I was going to AA meetings on a regular basis.
With a bunch of old dudes?
Yeah, with a bunch of old dudes, a couple other people from my high school.
Yeah. It's like Scared Straight.
Yeah.
Give me your shoes, motherfucker.
Yeah. You want to come to AA? You go fucking meet a guy like me.
Well, fuck you in the ass.
You know, it was actually the opposite because I found everyone was too friendly.
Yeah.
Like they're like, we're going on a retreat. You should come. We'll all go camping. I'm like, I just met you.
Wait, I'm 14.
Yeah, I'm 14.
Of course you do, you sick old pervert.
Yeah. Excuse me. And so from then, you know, I got my shit together academically and graduated from ODSS, which is Orangeville District Secondary School, also known as Overdose Secondary School.
Oh.
Lots of drugs, lots of trouble. And I actually graduated as an Ontario scholar with like a 90% average, got the Community Drama Award, the Community Art Award, and didn't go to my graduation because I had Maryland's Vitamins band practice.
Oh, wow.
I got a phone call at practice at our drummer's house, and they were like, hey, man, you've cleaned up at grad. And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm writing a song called Ollie.
Colin can't make it today. He's too busy rocking out in a storage space somewhere out. Skirts
of Oh, it was a basement. It was a basement.
Oh, yeah.
Basement in terracotta.
Yeah. So your parents splitting up, do you think that had a lot to do with the drinking? Obviously, has.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I had initially gone to live with my mom.
Yeah.
And
did she drink like a lot?
No, not at all. Neither of my parents drank. Mm-hmm. Neither of them drank to excess anyway.
Right.
You know, my dad would have like a beer here and there, but that's it. And my grandfather on my mom's side was a serious alcoholic and pretty much drank himself to death. I've very little recollection of him. I think I've actually maybe met him like four times before he passed. And the one thing that happened with my parents' divorce was I lived with my mom in Waterloo in married students' apartments at the University of Waterloo. Went to Waterloo Collegiate, which was kind of a rich kid school, and which actually had like pep rallies and shit for football. So I was like, whoa, I hate this place.
What happened?
Yeah, and actually opted to go back to Orangeville to live with my dad because I was like,
of the school.
Yeah, my friends were all there and stuff. And what had happened, and I don't fault either of my parents for this. I mean, you can all, you know, you always blame your parents for everything. But I at some point, I kind of realized, you know, they had just both divorced. So after 20 years of marriage, so they're probably both, you know, emotionally, you know,
done,
shaken and confused and to a certain degree scared. And when I moved back to live with my dad, he had started seeing a woman who's now my stepmom, but they didn't live together. And I, as the manipulative teenager that I was, could work that to my advantage in terms of partying. So I would say, hey, Dad, I'm going to stay at my pal Jeff, who was in Maryland's Vitamins, on like a Tuesday night. And he'd be like, okay, cool. And then I knew that meant he was going to stay. My dad would stay at my future stepmother's house. And so we could just party at my place.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, and I mean, I had a lot of anger issues, a lot of depression, anxiety, all of which I was never properly diagnosed for until this past year.
Yeah, I think as a 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old, you're kind of thinking you're indestructible and you don't address anything.
Yeah.
In fact, all you think is that I'm the smartest motherfucker out there and everybody's stupid.
Yeah.
You know, until you turn 22, 23, you start getting a little bit more and you live with loss.
Yeah.
This happens, right?
Well, 22, 23, I went even further off the deep end.
Right.
I relapsed.
You tipped the scale.
Yeah. I relapsed around 20 and for alcohol, and then no turning back from that for the longest time, and then got into drugs.
This is Hotch's Life Days, or is this?
This is still Maryland's Vitamins. I discovered weed and was chronic with weed, and then drinking all the time, like all the time. You know, it's funny, and the hypocrisy of me being in that band.
I was just about to say
because I was like, we were like this super
fighting for human rights,
and I talk about this with friends all the time that like. drugs and alcohol are like the least subversive thing I've ever done. Because like, I just became, you know, get high, get drunk, sit on my couch. You know, I've spent more time probably watching, you know, Gordon Ramsay yell at people in restaurants for than I have meals, for fucking reading.
Right. Yeah. The other thing too is maybe, no, this is just the hypothesis, but maybe the whole thought of you writing lyrics for what would be called the common man or for human rights and ethics, maybe that was just your say, okay, I'm putting my bit in there.
Yeah.
So I can go back and do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
And you're not going out and raping and pillaging, but you're sitting, you're not really doing, being proactive.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. All talk, no action. Yeah. Like, for sure. I mean, I went to a few demonstrations and, you know, we can talk about the efficacy of actually protesting in this modern age and if it does anything, but I got a little cynical. And that's the other thing. Alcohol made me cynical, like really, really cynical and negative and, you know, back to, I had other issues aside from alcoholism that I wasn't addressing, you know, and so essentially drugs and alcohol were just me self-medicating. Just, you know, there's a void. I'm filling the void with booze and drugs. Yeah. And you eventually, you know, I had several rock bottoms and, you know, several quit times. The last time I made a serious effort to quit was in Hostage Life, and that's what broke Hostage Life up.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't be in this band anymore. Because, like, the average, we would practice about 2 or 3 nights a week, aside from shows. And in a 2-hour practice, I would be crushing, like, 2 40s and, like, 4 tall cans.
Holy
in, like,
shit.
A 2-hour period, if not more. If I'd finished them early, I'd be trying to get beers off other people, going home to my, at the time, fiance. And just shit face. I was a bad drunk. Like, I could go be super happy, super fun, jerk.
Yeah.
Total, like.
I just made the sound effect for you.
Yeah, that was perfect.
But just do it again.
I could be really awesome and then a jerk.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Because Hostage Life actually had a radio following and
Hostage Life was funny because every good thing that we wrote a good record. I like the stuff I did with Hostage Life. I have no regrets for any of the bands. I mean, some of the early Merlin's Vitamus stuff is you could really tell it was written by like an 18-year-old.
Well, that's the best part of it, man.
Yeah. Come on. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, the first Merlin's Vitamus record is like probably the most punk rock thing I ever did because half the band couldn't play.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. but by the time we got to with you though, we'd had a couple lineup changes.
Yes.
And there was like, okay, now, you know, Adam can play bass and tune a bass and stuff. And
I remember we should call Adam now because he wouldn't know it's me calling him. I can do it.
Yeah.
But he has, my God, I've never laughed so hard.
Oh, that guy's hilarious.
With him, and we just hit it off so hard with just the timing.
Oh, yeah.
We remember the riffs we get into, even in particular at the house, when I moved the studio to the house?
Yeah.
I was thinking the last time you guys came by and recorded, or, yes, was that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we did the 7-inch, Meanwhile During the Class War for Ugly Pop.
Yes.
Yeah.
At the house, my house.
Yeah.
And I still remember, I don't know what the fuck we were laughing at, but we weren't drunk or high, but we just had that. We could be a combo. Let's take the shit on the road.
Oh, yeah, stuff, yeah.
You know? But would that ever happen again? I don't know. I haven't talked to him in a long time.
Oh, yeah. No, he's an awesome dude, actually. Yeah.
I see him on Facebook.
Yeah.
I see everybody on Facebook.
Yeah, no, I see him on a fairly regular basis. Mm-hmm. My roommate is actually his brother.
Oh.
Yeah. His younger brother, Kyle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after Vitamins, me and Adam were in The Victim Party. Yes. With Kyle, with my wife now, ex-wife, and a couple guys from other bands in Toronto. One guy from Hostage Life, one guy from The Artist Life. Mm-hmm. And
as long as it had life in it.
Yeah, as long as it had life, that was like the one of the mandatory things.
Shit, I was in the wrong goddamn bands.
So like I was saying, like, I don't have any regrets for like it. I like my like body of work as a
punk. But the cost was probably a little.
Well, the cost, yeah, and I mean that's one of the weird things is, you know, I was a high functioning alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I could hold down a job. I mm-hmm. put out, I think if you count it all, like 12 records.
Yeah. That's under 10 years or something.
Yeah. Right. And that's like, you know, a fair amount. I toured. Yeah. Touring was a whole other disaster.
Oh,
I was just drunk the whole time.
Because you're, you know what? I had a few tours in my life where I wasn't driving because we had a bus or something. And yeah. I was liquored every night.
Oh,
every
yeah.
night. Why? Because I didn't have to drive.
Yeah. I let my license expire in my early 20s.
Yeah.
So I was permanent passenger. Mm-hmm. And, you
smart
know,
move for a drunk.
Yeah. Excellent move for a drunk. And, you know, if I couldn't drink in the van, I would, you know, just get high in the van or pop pills or whatever was possible.
What pills were you into?
Anything.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Anything. Painkillers for sure. Yeah. Love Percocets. Some anti-anxiety pills because you've popped enough of them.
Xanax?
Clonazepam.
Okay, yeah. That's the heavy duty.
Yeah, which I'm actually on now on a scheduled regimented dose for anxiety.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then once I was drunk enough at the end of the night, like anything was a good idea. Like cocaine was a great idea. Mushrooms was a great idea. Ecstasy was a great idea. Mm-hmm. You know, and towards the end of my drinking days, I quit November 2013. And while we were recording the last Victim Party album, because I was doing a song in the vocal booth and I was too drunk and I couldn't remember the lines, I couldn't sing in time, and decided, okay, fuck, I cannot keep doing this. Like, I know I have a drinking problem. This is impeding on my fun time. I was excited about this project. So I stopped, relapsed on New Year's, then relapsed again in May. And May was my, like, absolute rock bottom. Mm-hmm. But that relapse on New Year's, I was already taking medication for depression, for anxiety. And I relapsed, like you do on New Year's. I was up till like noon, stuffing shit up my nose, popping pills. And it's kind of amazing. When I spoke to my doctor and my drug and alcohol clinician afterwards, they were like, how did you not have a heart attack?
Right.
Like, you should have died because all of these pills say do not take with alcohol. And I drank a lot of alcohol and then mixed it with cocaine. And
yeah. And if you start that stuff slow and ramp it up, you're okay. Like, that's what becomes functioning.
Yeah.
But if you stop for a while and try to get back on that horse too fast, I mean, it's a good thing you weren't doing heroin. You would be dead.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
You would be dead.
Yeah. And you know, I didn't have it as bad as a lot of other people. You know, I should say that. Like, I was, you know, like I said, functional still.
Yeah.
You know, I never was evicted. I didn't have to sleep on the streets. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I can't go into denial about the fact that I just say multidisciplinary addict. Because, beer is my go-to, but if I couldn't get beer or wine or fucking anything, I'd be like, yeah, what do you got, man? Let's let's do that.
Do you think, I think you know the answer to this, but I think that anxiety fed the booze problem.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you would want to, if you felt any form of stress from anxiety, what's the first thing, like the ultimate quick and you know, switch off, you know, and that is booze, drugs, and, you know, and whatever.
Absolutely. And it's self-medication, where it's like, you know, they call it a social lubricant, and it's absolutely true. Because at a party, sober, in my 20s, early 30s.
It's almost unthinkable, right?
Yeah, terrifying. Also, like, that's the other thing.
Was that the fear of the crowds or fear of outdoor stuff?
Yeah, well, yeah. I suffer from, like, mild form of agoraphobia, which isn't...
Just like Ben Weasel.
Yeah. Well, see, his is different. Like, the way it's been described to me by my medical team, I have a medical team.
Do they? You guys all get together and play hockey?
No, but they have phone conversations about me.
No shit, really?
Yeah, yeah.
You should do it all on Skype now.
Yeah. But
I'm here. I'm right here. I'm here.
Agoraphobia is actually the fear. It isn't like a fear of a crowd or being out of the house. It's a fear of having a panic attack while out of the house.
Oh, okay.
And I get pretty severe panic attacks. So in before I was diagnosed with it, I didn't know what the fuck was wrong. Yeah. I would just suddenly feel anxious. My panic attacks towards, you know, the last year or so got to be where, you know, you get rapid heart mm-hmm. rate, heartbeat, and then my heart would skip a beat, mm-hmm. and then the beat after the skip would be this like boom, and when that mm-hmm. boom hit, it would feel like from the back of my head to my fingertips, I was being like shocked, like mm-hmm. if you put your fingers, you know, in mm-hmm. a socket that yeah. didn't have the cover on it, yeah. you actually touch that wire, yeah. and those could last days.
Wow!
So I would just be like at home, and if I moved, it would be like zap, zap, and this I was trying to not drink. Trying to not do drugs, still doing drugs, but trying not to drink and having these fucking brutal panic attacks and shocks, mm-hmm. and it was just unmanageable. And you know, I got to a really dark place where I was just like, I fuck all this. Like,
you've explained something to me that, because when I used to do a lot of touring in clubs,
yeah,
going to see shows was something I fucking hated.
Yeah.
No. I hated it because it was, why are all these fucking people here?
Yeah.
I remember, and I thought I was like having a panic attack, but you've completely dispelled that. Turns out I was just mildly irritated about all the people. No panic at all. I was just upset. Like, why the fuck are all these people here?
Yeah. Go do something else.
Yeah. They're the fucking weaker thans. Get over it.
Go home and shovel your walkway so I can walk down
exactly.
the street.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's funny because there'd be bands like the Weaker Than. So you'd see them at Shanghai and there'd be like 5-10 people. And the next time they came back, they sold out Lee's Palace.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, this is my band. Why are you all here? Go away. Yeah. And even sitting with my wife Spring, she'd be like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I don't know. But I'm used to being able to get away from, I was used to being able to just go to a room and not be around all these fucking people.
Yeah.
When I was touring with SNFU in a lot of clubs, a lot of clubs. You know, and but yeah, it's nothing like getting shocked.
Yeah, and I mean, those didn't even happen all the time outside mm-hmm. of the house. They happened inside the house. They happened with mm-hmm. and just now I'm in therapy and we're trying to figure out like what the triggers are.
Did you get it looked at that time or?
I was in the process.
Yeah,
like that was I saw my doctor and then we. In what was it September 2013 I got referred to the addictions program at Toronto Western in the concurrent disorders, which means you have a chemical dependency but you also suffer from these other, you know, forms of mental illness. Mm-hmm. So I had severe
feeds the other.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and trying to figure out, you know, essentially what's the void you're trying to fill, how to deal with, you know, all of these things and stay sober. And you know, I don't want to say blessed because I'm an atheist, but I'm fortunate.
You can say that. You're old enough.
Yeah.
We get it.
Yeah. I'm fortunate that I have an excellent family doctor, GP. Yeah. And then when I got put in that program for concurrent disorders, I got an amazing clinician who I hold both of them and my Alcoholics Anonymous for Agnostics group that I go to. If you're an alcoholic and you don't want to go to regular AA because of the God stuff, there are agnostic meetings for AA, which are great. Yeah. Those three tools and, you know, also other friends who know who they are because I've thanked them.
Right.
They're why I'm alive. Yeah. Like I was dark in 2014. Yeah. I had, you know, very little will to live, very little clue as to what to do with my life, how to endure another 24 hours, mm-hmm. and, you know, going to this clinician, getting some guidance, my general practitioner saying, like, look, we're going to get you a med assessment so we can get you on proper medication. Mm-hmm. Lots of people are anti-pharmaceutical for dealing with mental health issues right now, and I'm not one of them. I'm like, fuck. I needed that shit to maintain. Mm-hmm. I needed it to detox was the other thing. You can't, like, for me, just stopping everything was difficult.
Well, we were talking a little bit about that.
With an anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. Right? So, you know, there's you know, drugs to carry you through that and get you off of...
The lesser of two evils.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if you are, you know, a patient like me, I listened to what they said. Like, it wasn't like they were like, don't take this more than twice a day. I didn't take it more than twice a day. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. It was like, shit, I want to get my stuff together. And now, I mean, this is all getting depressing and everything, but it's not for me.
No.
Like, right now, I'm 8 months, 8.5 months sober. It's the longest I've been sober as an adult. Mm-hmm. I'm in the best shape of my life. I'm happy most of the time. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I went out with a friend last night who we don't really, like, hang out, you know, one-on-one. We usually talk, you know, on Facebook or text message. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you're much happier than I thought you would be. And I'm like, way more. Yeah. You know, you take the shroud of you know, depression away, the shroud of, you know, being inebriated away.
Yeah.
And at first it's scary because, like, now, shit, I have to deal with all my emotions. But then you sort of get, you know, you sort of rediscover the wonder of life.
All it takes is one little victory.
Yeah.
One little,
and
there's hope.
And I've had that. I've had those victories mm-hmm. over and over, you know. I had a divorce this year, which was poorly timed.
Right.
Necessary. I mean, I have no ill will towards my ex-wife. Mm-hmm. I wish her all the best.
But let's talk a little bit about that, because obviously the booze in the...
Oh, we were definitely, like, we started as party couple. It's funny because being in a band together, and then you have, you know, one guy mm-hmm. who is just out of his head.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, it's a relationship in the band with your wife, but then a relationship with four other people.
It's like, it's traveling with a retarded 8-year-old.
Yeah. A mentally challenged 8-year-old.
Yeah, okay. A mentally challenged, retarded 8-year-old.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, the Victim Party wasn't even going to be a touring band. We weren't going to do any of that. It was just supposed to be fun. Yeah. Started as we called it a beer league because we would get together and just drink beers and play. But
I'm in a few of those bands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for me, like, some people can maintain that, and I'm not one of those guys. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm comfortable with it now. Mm-hmm. You got to know your limits, know what you're comfortable mm-hmm. doing, know what's safe.
Yeah.
For you to do, you know, mm-hmm. there's certain, like, you know.
You start seeing those little triggers and those little warnings and the little flags and you're like, okay, I'm not going to do that because this is where I could go.
Yeah.
I have a friend up in north from here and he just quit drinking and all of his songs are about drinking.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Every song he's got, like, and he plays all over the place all the time. And it's like, what do you do now?
Yeah.
You put the hat on and start singing about booze. It's like, he's actually changed his whole plan now. He's like, well, the lyrics are actually going to be say, okay, it's fun to drink, but here's what can happen.
And that thing, the amusing thing too about the Victim Party was we had tons of songs about partying, but if you
had party in them.
Yeah, it had party in them.
You should call it the Victim Life.
Yeah, Victim Life. Hey, we just full circle, man. End of show.
The end.
But we focused on the negative side of partying all the time.
Right. Oh, okay.
And being, like, over-partied. And
was that you? The same thing, though, you're trying to sort of say, even back in the Maryland's Vitamins Day, you're trying to explain something that's wrong, but you're just doing it.
Yeah.
You feel like, well, I'm sort of putting that in to let you know, drinking the bat, but I'm going to go get loaded.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, band, you know, everyone in a band is full of shit.
It's true.
Yeah, we're mostly
this is true.
Full of shit.
How? Yeah. And so you toured. Did you go over to Europe? Make it over to Europe?
We never made it over to Europe.
Oh, get the Hostage, band back together and go. Over.
Yeah, Hostage Life had a deal with a UK label.
What was it called?
Household Name Records.
Okay.
And the plan was they were going to license the record for X amount of dollars and then give us a tour. I'm pretty sure they never paid. And I know for a fact we never got to Europe. But
you know that part.
Yeah.
Maybe you're too wasted.
Yeah.
Let's call Paul. And I was like,
well,
fuck, you talking to me there like for fucking 8 times.
Again, Haas's Life wasn't supposed to be a touring band either.
Right.
It just always steamrolls out of control. Mm. And then, you know, Paul owns his own business. I was in fucking university.
Yeah.
Everyone else had like full time jobs.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, touring's hard.
It's so hard to explain touring to the normal people.
Yeah.
Because. You want to really go out and make a go at it. Yeah. The only way we can actually go and get exposed is not through record sales. It's through touring and playing and getting the right opening slot and
playing
political with the promoters and getting asked back and all that stuff. And somewhere down the line, I, in my own life, I managed to completely fuck that up.
Oh, well, me too. Like, yeah. I don't understand to this day the business side of music.
It always changes the fucking chameleon.
Yeah, and like, we had booking agents, but a lot of like Hostage Life, who we did, was the most active band I was in. We did the most stuff, but we could not get paired up on tours with, like, I don't want to say the right bands, but bands where we fit, you know. There were like, you know, and we toured with some awesome bands, but, and we, you know, we,
they're all sideways steps.
We went out east with Strike Anywhere, and you're like, they're a huge band. And we thought, well, great, we fit with them, but through, I don't know what the fuck happened, you know, we're in Halifax on like a Saturday with Strike Anywhere playing to 40 people. And you're like, there should be 500 people here.
Yeah. Good Riddance, when I was touring with Good Riddance, took Strike Anywhere on a tour.
Yeah.
Them and Grade. Man, oh man, when we were in Florida, they didn't like, the Floridian Nazi dudes didn't like,
Didn't
like Strike Anywhere very much.
Yeah.
Because of their political thing. You know what? I just found out Propaganda just played in Florida.
Oh, really?
I never thought I'd see the day. Like, because they're like, we don't go south of D.C. or something. Yeah, that's what they said, because they've been getting death threats and stuff. Or, you know. But here they are, they're playing Florida, it's a new world.
It's a brave?
It's a brave new world. Less talk and more rock.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So you never made it over to England. Well, England sucks for live shows. Germany's, I mean, I went over
on my own.
Yeah.
Like, I've been to a fair amount of Europe just
traveling around.
Just traveling and being a tourist, which I fucking love. I love being a tourist.
I would do that in a heartbeat rather than going and taking a band out there.
Yeah. I mean,
we should do it. Let's go backpacking.
Yeah.
You imagine? I know a lot of people over there. Actually, it's not such a bad idea. It'd be kind of fun to do.
I'd have to take a lot of pills with me.
No. Oh, flying?
No, just my everyday.
Oh, right. Like, your prescription.
My prescription.
Me too.
Cocktail.
I got some prescriptions too. So, going through customs and shit.
No, totally. Be like, okay, no, I need these to sleep. I need these just to be functional. Yeah. And I need these for this.
Yeah. Rob Moyer, he travels around on a bicycle. And
I love it. That guy's like, it's so amazing. I'm so proud of him.
Oh my god, like, he plays houses and I try to explain this to people and they're like, what? I'm like, are you kidding? Like, they're confused by his prowess, how he does it.
It's great, and he's one of those guys who should be doing that. And,
yes,
you know,
and there's only a certain time in your life where you can do that too.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the trains are great over there, the people are accommodating you, but there's only so many wooden floors you can sleep on before you start thinking, you know, maybe I should, you know, settle down a little.
Oh,
he's hardly here. I'm trying to get him on this podcast.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, he's gone all the time. I think he's in Europe right now.
Yeah, he's going to, well, is he going to Australia, or am I just making that up?
Oh yeah, no, he is.
Yeah just traveling. But he seems to manage to, like, he's got it figured out. He's the Billy Bragg of Canada.
Yeah,
you know, he can go and play an acoustic, and his voice is completely changed from back in the old stiff days.
Yep.
And I saw him, and he put a band together real loose over at the Horseshoe.
Yes.
I got to tell you, I was fucking blown away.
Yeah.
He puts on a show, and you can tell he's done 1,000 shows.
Yeah.
You know, he never stopped.
Yeah.
You think about it, you know what I mean? I stopped for 5 years. I'm sure you had your breaks in there too.
My longest was 2 years.
But he just kept going.
Yeah.
And never stopped. And for that, you know, it's paying him off, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a classy dude.
Yeah.
Let's call him.
Yeah. Let's call him. Hey, Rob. What time is it there?
How do you say time? Fucking German time.
I'm Swiss. Where German Mennonite. That doesn't mean I speak a lick of it. Schnitzel.
I say, you know, I keep getting in touch with him over Facebook Messenger.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm in Austria right now, and I don't know what's going on, and I don't know when I'm coming back. I'm like, God love you for that, man.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
That to me sounds like that uncertainty sounds like a nightmare.
Does it really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
you never fly by the seat of the pants kind of?
Well, I did for so long, which was the problem. And now, I don't have my phone on me, but like now, my entire week is regimented. Mm-hmm. Like, I have you in as 11:30, and then after that is the gym, and then after that is I have to put in that I'm having lunch and dinner. Mm-hmm. Sounds, you know, like retarded.
Just now you have a phone.
Now I have a phone, so I can plan everything. But I have to do that.
Yeah.
So one, for a sense of accomplishment, because I used to bail on everything because I'd be, you know, drunk or fucked up. And also because turns out partying too much will destroy your memory.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. When you approached me about this, and we were, you were like, we'll talk about the old days. I was like, oh, fucking remember anything from the old days.
Yeah. You know, if someone actually asked me, there was a time in my life I was really busy. I still don't remember that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like lucid. I was fine, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is now two dudes talking, and I like that.
Yeah,
the whole
yeah.
getting through the whole life. Tell me about your life. How does that make you feel?
Actually, I love my life right now, man.
Yeah. It's no, you look sweet. Very happy. That's good shit, you know? And I, yeah, because we, on our friendship journey pathways, didn't really cross a lot. I think you recorded a Hostage Life album in my studio with Steve Risen.
Yeah, with Steve Risen's. Yeah,
Risen. Yeah. I get the names fucked up. I feel like I'm like, somehow I've got this weird dementia going on.
Well, that's because we don't hear people's names. We just read them.
Yes. That's true. Yes. And he's still recording. I heard some stuff he did for The New Enemy.
Oh, yeah. The last thing I gave you, we did with him.
Okay.
Yeah, with the crowdfunding thing.
He's really good.
Oh, yeah. He's a great dude, man.
Really good. Good dude. Yeah. And so you guys took my place over for what? It was a month or something?
Oh, yeah. That record went on way too long. Way too long. I like it. I'm happy with it. Yeah.
Which one was that, by the way?
Walking Papers.
Okay. That was the big one, right?
Yeah. And that was...
The one, the topmost of the poppermost.
Yeah. Well, you know what? All that...
Straight to the middle.
CanCon.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Should have called it
Edge
CanCon.
102
yeah.
needed and nepotism. CanCon and nepotism. Someone who was working at Edge 102 yeah. when they played good music.
Yeah.
I don't know. I take that back. Whatever. Yeah. You still hear Nirvana.
That's true. It's turning into the golden oldies.
Actually, the other day I heard an AC/DC song on Edge, and I was like...
Crazy.
I was like, oh, that's all right. I like this song.
You hear Chris Slade's coming back to AC/DC?
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people were like, fuck you, Thunderstruck.
Yeah.
But now it's like, well, if people have taken YouTube videos of them, Chris Slade and Phil Rudd.
Yeah.
Doing the same song, and it's just like night and day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, no, that's a guy who, you know, Chris Slade is a fucking drummer.
Yeah.
I was on the satellite radio, got in my car, and I'm like, the 90s, it just has all the shit.
Yeah.
It's like TLC. Waterfalls, Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls. I'm like, that's not my 90s, man.
Yeah.
No, your 90s is.
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah. Isn't that when the 90s, when music got completely turned on its ear?
Yeah, because of, like, rock bands came back.
Yeah.
And I was in high school for that. And, and I remember, like, you know, Nirvana talking about, you know, women's issues. Like, Rape Me was about, not about rape, but about, like, corporate rights. But at the same time, there was this, like, undercurrent of, like, you know, left-wing politics. Bikini Kill was starting up.
And political correctness.
About, yeah, and feminism. But I never thought political correctness was a bad word. I thought it was like, you know, fucking, sorry, white males, your time is up. Like,
yeah.
That's how it was like, okay. To me, it meant fairness. Like,
it's true. But the other thing, too, is, I mean, just to be the devil's advocate on the whole thing, is that political correctness became a little judgy.
Well... Absolutely. I mean,
so it put you on a different side of a table. Even if you considered, even if you were a little bit off of what the left said was correct, or vegans or vegetarians, or you wore leather boots, all of a sudden you're judged and pushed over into the corner.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, you still see that happening now.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm like left of center. And
it's just because it's Rich Whitey getting pushed over. Like, wait, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah. But I mean, in that period, because I was a teenager, like, I then had my insular bubble of punk rock friends, you know, guys who would, like, you know, and then to get out into the real world and, like, get a job at, like, a chain and you're working with, like, you know, regular norms.
Yeah.
And then to be exposed to that, to me, was just like, what, you, like, you harbor this attitude?
Yeah.
Like, I thought we were all past this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even to this date, you're still like, every now and then you're like,
really? Well, the shit that happens now that is insane for judgmental stuff. It's not just a physical, here's our dividing line. It's become very political, about, especially like if you're in Africa and 50,000 people are killed, then that's not as bad as if it was in, say, Jerusalem.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh,
so who's to say that, you know, all of this is, you know, wrong? You remember Al Shaw? Yeah. Alan Shaw used to play in Foursquare, and he helped you out on some stuff. But he told me this crazy story because he used to manage an SO. And he had a Sunni and a Shiite. And they don't get along.
Yeah, yeah.
Working as attendants. And one guy got so mad at the other guy, he poked his fucking eyeball out.
Jesus.
With his finger.
Yeah.
And and he's like, what the fuck? And he's saying like stuff to his buddy saying, I'm going to fuck your ass. I'm going to fuck your ass. And he's like, you know what you're trying to tell him, right? And he's, he's like, so he had to take him to the hospital and fired him with his eyeball hanging out. And he put garbage bags down in his car because he used to have this really rad car.
Yeah. Also, you know, you don't want eyeball juice all over your car.
No. Nobody wants eyeball juice all over the
nobody
car.
Nobody wants that. Well, that's the interesting thing is the argument. I forget what the fuck I was reading, but they're saying that the definitive argument of this era is going to be religion. Yeah. It's the definitive topic. Like, how is this going to be resolved? Because, you know, we have, you know, the war on terror. Is it a war on Islam? Is Islam inherently violent?
Right.
Who's the aggressor in Israel and Palestine? Are they both aggressors? And then you have, you know, the Supreme Court in the United States, like, overturning abortion right laws. Yeah. And, you know, people still, because of religious reasons, opposing gay marriage. Yeah. And
even the Pope is saying, you know, just wear a condom.
Yeah, exactly.
No big deal.
It's an interesting time, a scary time, but very interesting in that, you know, it's being... And then again, the other thing I think that's going to be defining is gender issues in terms of, you know, people who are trans, but then also in terms of sex, the term rape culture is in our general lexicon now.
Yeah.
You know, and I personally do not think it's a feminist myth. You know?
No.
I'm like, yeah, no, absolutely.
No, that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not just like isolated incidents. Our culture allows it.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's interesting. There's a lot we could go on forever.
Well, equal pay amongst women and men
still
is still an issue, but nobody seems to have a problem with it.
Yeah.
My wife works at Rogers Cable, and she gets paid 15% less than someone in her position who'd be a man.
Yeah.
Well, why? She does the same gig.
Yeah. And then you have, you know, we have to make a law saying that, but then it's, oh, my men's rights. Can you even believe that there are men's rights movements?
I saw some of that stuff, and I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah, those guys are...
What?
Are, I don't know what happened to them.
It's on Fox News, so it's got to be true.
Oh, yeah.
But this lady is talking about men's rights.
Yeah,
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Listen, everything should be equal in my life.
Yeah.
Everything should be equal, but it... Sometimes it isn't equal.
Yeah.
Like the whole idea of men and women are built completely different. Men are stronger, but that's changing.
Yeah.
You know, I think in about 50 years from now, we're all going to be one gender. It's going to be so androgynous that no one will know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, there's that the replacement song. Like in the future, you'll look back and be like, your installs are so silly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's working. And I think, well, do we need to have gender-based relationships? Do we need to have a man and a woman to make a kid normal?
No.
And the answer is no.
No, absolutely.
But some people argue, like, we do. This is what we need. We need a strong male presence and this and that. And there was a thing going on when they were trying to legalize gay marriage where the son of two lesbians got up and spoke.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it was moving because you think, hey, man, he said, this is what is missing. I'm missing a father, but this is what I gathered. This is what I gained.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that goes down to genetics. If you have bad parents, whether they're man or woman, or two dogs, you're gonna be what genetically.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, there's genetics and then there's rearing as a child. Yeah. So.
Well, I think environment plays a huge role.
Yeah.
Man, like if you have a man and a woman as your parents, if they both hit you at night,
you're
not going
to
be...
There's something to be said about having a cigarette put out in your forehead.
Yeah.
And that turns into hate for no matter just who.
Yeah.
Maybe cigarettes. There you go. I never smoked. Why? Because my dad put cigarettes out on my forehead.
Oh, No.
Maybe. No?
No.
It's a bad theory.
That's a terrible
theory. It's a horrible theory. Sorry, folks. Let's fucking turn it.
We've already dropped the R-bomb.
That's right. We don't even need to talk about new country and music and how things are.
I don't even know anything
about
it.
It's crazy, dude. I work for a band that's considered new country.
Oh, really?
Through their tour managing. And let me tell you, I like these guys. They're awesome.
Yeah.
But the lyrics are smart. That's what I like about it.
Because
the lyrics are smart. The music is not too far off what I heard as you know, whenever. And but you hear this stuff, this fucking Florida, Georgia line or whatever, this new country stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You know, dude, I don't...
What happened?
I don't listen to the radio. I don't have cable. So I'm, again, in my insular bubble of, you know... and I'm listening to stuff now that came out in the early 2000s and the 90s again that I'd never... That I missed.
Yeah.
And so I'm just... This is the future. I fucking love the future. Because I could go back easily without dropping hundreds and hundreds of dollars and, you know...
You stick your thumb on your phone and all of a sudden...
All of a sudden, I can listen to the entire Company Flow discography. And I didn't even know that was going on because I lived in Orangeville and they were in New York. You know?
Who would have thought that Apple would be the largest record label? Ever. One that makes money, you know? Why? It's a simple premise, too, right?
Yeah.
It's 30%. That's all it is.
Yeah.
30%, and you get paid, and it's up to you to promote it. It's actually a pretty good model, if you think about it.
Yeah,
the only problem I have with it is that you're all of a sudden put in a pool full of 50 million bands
that
sound like you. So, therefore, now it's harder for you to promote what you do. And now everybody just goes out and plays live now anyways.
Yeah.
It's a new thing.
I don't even know who made money. Who makes money?
This is a ponderous look on my face, folks. Sum 41 made money.
Oh, Sum 41 made money. That's
true. Sum 41 made money, and they were smart with their money.
Oh.
So they didn't go out and fucking spend a ton of dough on touring. I know that one, personally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was their tour manager for like a year and a half. They were smart at the start. So when they started selling albums, of course, they started getting the buses and touring and stuff. But I've said this before, but those guys are as loyal as the day is long.
Yeah.
And that is, to me, is pretty strong. They're committed to the people that they knew and as friends, and they still have it. I mean, you sit there and you talk to one of them and you're like, hello, and they're like, hi. There's absolutely no reason for you to think that it's not the person you spoke to 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Because that's about once every 5 years I managed to actually speak to them. So.
Yeah, yeah. And I was saying earlier, like with bands, like every band that I was in, I'm still friends with everyone.
Yeah.
Which is
fucking, I wish I could say that.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's great. And I leaned on a bunch of them during my rough period and they were there, you know? And, you know, it's nice to know that I surrounded myself with good musicians, but also good people.
Yeah. Well, you're a talent and a commodity to them because the better you are, the better they can be.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's as it maybe getting a band together later on down the line. You need to be, you know, at your peak.
Yeah.
You know?
And well, they also just preferred me not to be a drunk asshole. So everyone is stoked and sober.
So they came back and said, listen, you know, was there ever intervention?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Tell me about that.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
is it embarrassing or is it?
It's dark.
Yeah.
So
I only see it on TV.
Yeah.
It looks fine on TV. Did it cut to commercial as soon as you're like, what are you going to do, Colin? You're like,
it was. The last time Victim Party played Montreal, we played Pooza Fest.
I always wanted to play that.
Yeah.
They never let us play.
I had been 5 months sober. I was still smoking Isms. Isms were like this synthetic cannabinoid you could buy at the convenience store.
Right, okay.
Zillion times more potent than weed.
Oh.
And, you know, not a lot is known about what's in it.
Yeah.
And there are like, you know, the odd internet report of people having psychotic breaks on them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was playing Pooza with my band. We had two shows in the same day. I ended up just sort of holing up in our rented apartment because I was super triggered to drink nonstop. Mm-hmm. Like it's sponsored by Pabst Blue Ribbon. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really see bands. I spent a lot of time alone. The day...
Your beard wasn't long enough.
Yeah, my beard was long. the day we played, you know, was sort of like we played this morning acoustic set for better or for worse. me and my wife pretty much were on the outs. Like, pretty much it was over. Mm-hmm. And I made the wrong decision to go beeline to the bar. And I think I drank 10 pints in 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And then continued drinking. And then had a botched suicide attempt. And then I fucking cut my wrists like up here.
Oh, you missed the mark.
missed the mark.
Too
completely
drunk.
Drunk in front of one of our guitarists, mm-hmm. who was, you know, is still my friend. And, yeah. you know, because I put people through some hell there. Then we played a fucking show at night.
Wow.
After that.
Yeah.
So I just wore long sleeves. And then a couple of days later, I checked myself into KMH, voluntold by my doctor. Mm-hmm. Stayed there for a week. And then next band practice was, hey.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't be a band because it's not healthy for you.
It's a perfect environment for an intervention because yeah. you all got to go there. There's no pretension yeah. like what's happening now.
And for me, I wanted to keep doing the band. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew my wife and I were not going to stay together. Mm-hmm. And she was in the band. And I mean, I take responsibility for the Montreal thing. Like, I'm the one who drank. I'm the one who did all that shit. And I was like, I need the band as an outlet. So, you know, and then that's also, to a certain degree, putting them a lot of pressure on everyone else.
Yeah, you're like, putting some responsibility on them. After all that shit, too, with cutting yourself and, oh, gosh.
Yeah, and you
you're
know.
Like, who's this fucking crazy person?
Yeah, exactly.
Can we sing songs about squeegee girls anymore?
Yeah. And they weren't, like, no one was, like, angry. They were concerned.
Yeah, of course.
And then I was like, well, let's just, you know, I need the outlet. Let's try and keep the outlet going. And it
when you came back from that quick rehab, was your life, did you think life was better? And
No. I still had way hard to go. June, July, August were like, and September were dark months. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, on my own. I'd been on sick leave. My doctor wanted me on sick leave because I'd had a breakdown followed by the Montreal breakdown, which was, you know, diagnosed as a psychotic breakdown because I was completely out of my head. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn how to be an adult because it was like years and years of partying and partying and partying.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, now you're on your own. Mm-hmm. You're going through the fun bureaucratic maze of EI mm-hmm. for my sick leaves. I had no money. And just it was crazy. And it took a long time. But I mean, We played a couple shows in the summer. Our last actual victim party show was on Steve Perry's CIUT, Equalizing and Distort.
Okay.
That's like our last performance. And then we had another show, which would have been my, I think, whatever. It would have been my X month sobriety date. And I was like, maybe I don't want to play that show. Mm-hmm. You know,
you're on a roll.
Yeah. Maybe I don't want to do that. And then one of the guitarists didn't want to play anymore, and I was like, yeah, this makes sense. And I think everyone kind of agreed on it. You know, it's not like no one else in the band can be in another band.
Did the album end up coming out?
Yeah, it came out.
Yeah, and well,
then
I have it.
Yeah, and then it's being repressed, I think, this month or next month by
on vinyl.
On vinyl, yeah, because the original was a graphic novel with a bookmark as the
download code. That's a fucking brilliant idea, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, we were pretty stoked because we wanted it to be gimmicky, but we didn't want it to be something someone had done.
It adds ownership to the music.
Yeah,
you have a book.
Yeah,
and not a lot of people read that stuff anymore.
Yeah,
so having you're taking this digital piece of information and putting it in your ears, but then you have something else to hold on to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that to me right there. What was I talking to this about? How are we going to solve digital music's problem, which is there's no ownership to it? And this is exactly taps into that.
Yeah.
You know, you've written a bunch of, I remember, what was your, did you write, remember those little novels?
Yeah, I did a few zines. I did Let's All Die, which I released 5 parts of. I never released the 6th, but I finished it.
Yeah.
And then had my
I still have mine.
Oh, awesome.
I found them in a box.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think I have 4 of them.
Yeah. I finished it, never released the 6th part, but in my mind, that's like, okay, I've written a novel, so that's done, off the list.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to try and get it published. I just wanted to.
You can now, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I could.
No problem.
Yeah, but I would just want to It, for me, it was the process. And then same with the Victim Party graphic novel.
Yeah.
I always wanted to draw a graphic novel, so I've done that. Check that off the list.
Yeah. So there's apps now where you can make an iPad book.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a friend of mine showed me
with
those.
Music and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I'm sort of done with that band right now.
Yeah, but you could do it just by writing, because you write, and your writing was really descriptive, and you know, it spoke to me because it was somebody my age that was sort of
you know,
speaking on certain things and relationship based stuff and things like that. So I really thought that was a cool idea because it was coming out in parts.
Yeah, this serialized chapbook.
Exactly. Yeah. So you could just go, oh, when's the next one? I'm excited.
Excuse me. You know. And that's how a lot of old, like, I don't want to say Victorian. I'm a fucking English major. My brain doesn't remember anything. But a lot of, Dickens stuff would be serialized. Same with, I believe, Robinson Crusoe was serialized as well.
Okay.
And like, people would buy them in parts.
Right, and Lord of the Rings actually was one big book until they went, no way.
Yeah.
It's like 900,000 or 1,000 pages. Like, no, we're good. We'll do it in three. Plus, the reason is, now we can sell three books.
Yeah, exactly.
Even back then they were thinking, right? Yeah, and are you, so you've got anything in the plans about writing more now?
Or? No, I'm working on a midlife crisis rap album, which is insanely fun. I've liked hip-hop forever. I got into hip-hop way before punk rock, and then just switch gears into punk rock, and then recently switched back into. And I'm not into like thug.
I was gonna say, what era is it? Is it?
I listen to a lot of like modern guys as well, but guys who have been, like who are actually like close to our age, like Aesop Rock, who's probably like 38 or 39, or LP and Killer Mike, who are like I think 40. You know, okay. and like I'm into stuff like that. It's funny how in rap there's this sort of these older guys who are at the top of their game, and you know they've been around forever, but they're doing their best stuff.
It's their time
now, which I find is interesting. But again, that's just a project. It's the same thing I look at as I wrote a novel. Like, okay, I'll make a rap record.
You'd be interested in the Manifesto Festival.
What's that?
It's a street festival, and they do it through a bunch of clubs in and around September.
Okay.
And I record the show at Young and Dundas.
Oh,
every
cool.
year. And I've done about 3 years now. And it's a fucking scream. Because it's not... We've had some pretty... Akon was there.
Okay.
Pheromone,
yeah. Yama,
whatever his name is, yeah. Yeah, dun.
Yeah.
I recorded that. I recorded him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's,
get the fuck up.
Yeah. And who else is there? Oh, a maestro.
Oh, Wicked.
Yeah. He had two Canadian, like, Mountie backup dancers that dressed up as Mounties.
That's awesome.
Just, like, and doing the fucking step ball chain and stuff. Like, he hasn't changed his act. He's, like, old Vegas, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, for hip-hop and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's free. You go out there, and it's fun, and they speak. There's no swearing. It's positivity through hip-hop.
Yeah.
And through art and culture, and I think it'd be right up your alley.
Yeah,
man.
I should check that out for
sure. Yeah, I'll put you in touch with the organizers anyways.
Because if
you're writing and you're doing this and that, it could all make into some awesome little...
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I don't even know if I'd ever perform hip-hop live. The breath control you need is just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I practice all the time, and I'm like,
you said midlife. Is this midlife based on, because you're talking about like, gotta get the dogs rabies shots?
No, I just call my midlife crisis rap album.
My car's broken down.
Yeah, no. Just, you know, I'm 39 and my life fell apart and it's putting it back together. So that's why I call it. That's what it's about. You know, it's just silly. It's political. I brag. I talk about drinking too much. I talk about the other thing. It's by no means a serious project.
Are you afraid to turn 40?
No. I saw a thing on the internet a while back about how half the world doesn't even get to be 20. You know?
Yeah,
and it was
right.
Like being 40, 50, 60, 70 is like a gift in this lifetime. And I really like being 39 right now.
Yeah.
You know?
I hated 39.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Turning 40 was very depressing for me.
Yeah. 35, I felt weird. Being in a band in my, like, mid-30s was pretty strange because we were playing with really young people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to stay in some kid's house. Yeah. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
You know?
Turning 30 was hard for me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, 30.
But I'm not really worried about 40. Like, I don't really care.
We've kind of come out of this long, sounds like almost 10, 15 years of chaos.
Yeah, I'd say 18, yeah. 19, yeah.
So 19 years of chaos deserves a little enjoyment in life.
Yeah.
And enjoy a little bit of payback. Not payback, that's the wrong word. But it deserves a little celebration.
Yeah.
How about that?
And I'm you know, I plan to mm-hmm. live really long. Okay. That's the plan.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
I like that. I've never heard explained that way.
Yeah. The plan is to like not die anytime soon.
Can you see yourself at 65?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to start smoking when I turn 65.
Oh, have you seen Little Miss Sunshine?
Oh, no.
Okay. Yeah. Alan Arkin's character in that is he's like the grandfather, and he's like 70 something, so he starts heroin.
Oh.
They're like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm an old man. Yeah, why can't I do heroin?
What's he going to do? No problems.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I'll get into heroin. I think because by that point, it'll be either really, really cheap and stupid or really, really expensive.
Yeah.
Or it'll be prescribed. Yeah. You know, we're going to give this guy heroin.
I already have my terminal illness planned out.
Oh, really? What's that going
to be? Oh, yeah, yeah. Anabolic steroids. Whew. Yeah. Anabolic steroids boost your immune system, get jacked, and...
You're going to juice and then...
and then get, you know... long story, but there's a film called American Made about... Mm-hmm. And it was made by a guy who's a bodybuilder. He's opposed to steroids. Mm-hmm. His brother takes them. But the part that resonated with me is they go to see this guy who in the 80s had HIV that turned into full-blown AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
Both of his lungs collapsed.
What are they called full-blown AIDS, by the way?
I don't know.
Just AIDS, really.
Yeah. I call it that because I'm very hyperbolic.
He had full-blown AIDS.
Yeah, not half AIDS.
But see, the thing that's, you know what it is the weight of it. Sorry, I'm fucking cut you off.
No.
So he had AIDS.
That's a good point. So he had AIDS, and his lungs collapsed. He had a really low T-cell count.
Mm-hmm.
He was in intensive care, managed to pull through that period, and then found out that the University of Berkeley, California, was doing a study on people with full-blown AIDS. It's not funny.
Half AIDS.
Who had AIDS.
AIDS.
And treating them with anabolic steroids.
Right.
So then they go to see this guy in the 2000s.
He's fucking jacked.
He's jacked. Yeah. He's the healthiest he's ever been in his life. And he's like, I'm going to live for like another few decades. And I was like, maybe. I mean, I have asthma. Mm-hmm. Asthma's treated with a steroid.
Right.
If I work at a vet clinic, if you bring a cat in with certain issues, mm-hmm. like skin issues, immune issues, you give it steroids.
Mm-hmm. Well, they'll figure out new ways to grow our organs.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
So when you for a lung,
yeah.
they'll say, you know, when you take your blood test for being diabetic,
yeah, yeah.
They'll take that and then they'll stick it into a pig's ass.
And grow
your lung
out
of a pig's ass.
That would be excellent.
Yeah. And you're like, what, you got a pig's ass for a lung? And you'd be like, well, as a matter of fact, I do.
Yeah, I have a pig's ass for a lung.
That's a very far reach for an...
you should have seen my other lung.
It looked like a pig's ass.
It looks like a pig's ass.
Are you a vegetarian?
No, man. Yeah. No, I did like all that. In mm-hmm. the 20s, I was vegan for 2 years. Unhealthy vegan for 2 years.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
And then unhealthy vegetarian for like mm-hmm. you know, 5 years. Now mm-hmm. now I just I try to eat as I've got bachelor food down pat.
Like okay? Heat up?
No, well, yeah. So what I do is I just cook like, you know, a bunch of chicken breast for the week.
Right.
And then my meal will be chicken breast and either a quick salad or chicken breasts right. and carrots, broccoli.
Oh, you eat healthy.
Yeah. But it's healthy because it's convenient and takes 5 minutes.
Right.
It's like, I don't have to cook anything. Yeah. I'm just like, okay, heat this piece of meat up or eat it cold.
Yeah.
And then I eat fucking carrots. And then, oh, look, I didn't put anything processed in my body. Aside from whatever in the chicken, I'm not deluded.
You don't want to go that far. I mean, unless you start, you know, you got a little spot in the backyard. Maybe get some chickens coming. Yeah. It's probably not too far off from where we live. There probably are the odd chicken in the backyard somewhere.
Oh, yeah. You can get those, like, urban chicken coops.
Yeah. You wouldn't have to worry about coyotes or any of that shit. The raccoons.
Oh, no, maybe. There was a coyote attack near.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, in Toronto, there's coyotes in and around the area.
That is the end of the apocalypse. That's the start of the apocalypse.
Coyotes.
Coyotes in Toronto.
Yeah.
Let's write a book.
I saw a badger in Toronto.
Oh, badgers are fucking badass.
Badgers are badass. When my wife and I lived in Parkdale, ex-wife, lived in Parkdale, she said she saw one. I was like, you were just high. You did not see a badger. Yeah. And then we were in our backyard once having a cigarette, and sure enough, a badger walked across our backyard.
Yeah, they got teeth, too. Right?
Yeah. That's you could see its claws.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's crazy.
I saw one in Portland, Oregon. I'll never forget it. And he was under our car or under our van. And I stuck my head in it and just went rah, with his teeth. I'm like, holy fuck, it's going to.
Yeah, it's going
to fucking eat me, man.
Well, the thing I'm afraid of the most, more than even getting robbed, run over, anything, I'm afraid of skunks in the city because they are fucking everywhere.
Also, the raccoons are fucking fearless.
Yeah.
At least where I live now, they're like, they hardly get into the garbage.
Yeah,
I don't know where they've come. I think there's probably some secret raccoon hunt because I hardly see them.
Oh, really?
I see lots of chipmunks. I see lots of squirrels, and our cat scares those away. But I have hardly seen. I saw a family of raccoons tried to move into our carport, and I got rid of them fast.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've never had to like kill or chase or any of that. But they come in waves.
Yeah.
And I think there's a new subdivision across the road, which sort of solved the raccoon problem.
I was on my porch having a cigarette in the summer, and you know, it's like 10:30 at night, and I see a guy with like a flashlight and a ladder, and he's going up and like to a darkened house, and I'm like, oh, come on. Like, oh, what do I do now? Do I call the police? Like, what do I do? So I'm just like,
He would wear a balaclava or
something? Well, I couldn't tell because it was dark, right? Yeah. And he just sort of popped out of nowhere. And I had to say, like, everything all right there, brother? Do you need any help? And he's like, oh, yeah, I think there's raccoons in my roof. And I was like, okay, thank God you're not a rapist or peeping Tom.
Yeah.
I was like, I was getting ready to go out. Yeah. I was like, I don't want to deal with you.
I feel that Toronto's not as dangerous as it used to be.
Crime's gone down for sure. Yeah.
Because around this area where we're at, there was a lot of drug dealers.
Yeah.
And then
we have our regular addicts in the neighborhood.
I saw a few of them.
Yeah.
Oh, and a disproportionate amount of old men with ponytails.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's up with that?
I don't know. I don't know what's up with young guys with the bun.
Man bun. They all look like Gene Simmons without makeup.
Yeah.
They do, right? Remember back in the old days, wear the fucking
bun behind. I always think it's like a young Sikh kid.
Yes, I don't know. We could do a whole new podcast on what we think trends are.
Yeah,
and what's going on? But let's, you know what? Let's
wrap it up.
Let's wrap this shit up, man. Colin, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really enjoyed it. Let's do it again.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, Colin, thanks so much for coming on this podcast. This podcast is brought to you by bot.96.lt as well as fetchclass.com. You could listen to the very start of the podcast and get all the information regarding this, so I'm not bothering you. Everybody, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Apologue Podcast. Subscribe, rate, review, give us a nice like, give us 5 stars. This would be great. Also, go to the website and click through to Amazon. So go to apologue.esy.es, apologue.esy.es. Click on the Amazon banner, chip into the show. That's about it, everybody. Have a good week. We'll see you again. I'll be here. Ciao, ciao.